welcome to today's conversation, the next in our series of conversations with the CBI about shortages of all kinds and how business leaders can cope with those. And we're going to focus our efforts today on this. I mean, if I had a pound every time somebody had said to me hybrid working over the last 6 months, I'd be a wealthy person. We're going to try and drill into what we mean by that, how it works, when it does, when it doesn't, what we might do. And before we get to that, I'm going to come, as I often do, to my good friend Matthew Fell, Chief Policy Director of the CBI. Hi, Matthew. How are you doing?
Hi, Liz. Hi, everybody.
Just give us a couple of updates. Tony Danko, who's the DG, obviously made that big speech, didn't he, going for growth not long ago. How's that gone? What's been the response?
So I think, Liz, as you say, we set out our stall on that a couple of weeks ago, and the idea was really to sort of raise the level of ambition about growth in the economy. So we were quite punchy in that and set out some ideas around permanent investment deductions and new approaches to sort of skills and investment from business. We've been talking quite a lot to the Treasury, to the Department for Education and others in government, and pretty well received, actually, I would say, Liz. The ideas, I think they're in the market for bold ideas for growth. So we've got quite good traction on those. So if people are on the call and were enthused by what we had to say, I would say, please do continue to feed in examples. We're definitely in the market from all of our members to say, look, if these changes came about, it would enable me to do X, Y, Z more things. Those are really powerful examples that we can get into government and help win the argument on that.
What about COVID? There's a sort of another big change, isn't there, coming at us is it England only, this thing about the removal of the requirement to self-isolate?
Yeah, that's right, Liz. I think it's been reasonably well trailed. We're expecting next week, possibly as soon as Monday, a new announcement from the government about what this new mode of existence is, almost this phrase, living with the virus, and what that means. I think there are a couple of things in there to have a watch out for. We're actually still rather keen for continuation of free availability of mass testing. We think that's really important to keep confidence up still. So we're continuing to have a go on that because there are rumours that that could be dropped. And then secondly, I think one for companies to start wrapping their heads around this idea that it might no longer be necessary to self-isolate if people are asymptomatic but positive, and how companies are going to apply that in terms of their own workplace policies, how that sort of correlates with sick pay and so on. Look, we're pushing government for clarity and guidance on that, so we're hopeful of getting some more on that. But it's something, just as a heads up, companies might want to start just now.
If testing isn't widely available and free, but if you're positive but asymptomatic, then you wouldn't have tested yourself and you wouldn't even know you had the virus. So you kind of, by default, wouldn't be isolating anyway, right? You'd just be going around.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of this needing the sort of regular testing, does we think that's still quite important. Yeah, the interaction between those two things we need to sort of work through.
Let's look at hybrid working then. And just let's make it clear to everybody who's watching or listening, what is the connection between hybrid working, which is a sort of catalyzed by the lockdown and the pandemic, and people have been trying to figure out how to make home working and all the rest of it work. What's the connection between that and shortages?
Yeah, well, Liz, as you know, the sort of shortages we've been focused on for a few weeks now, and just to put that in context again, latest figures this week, I think, suggested something like now 1.29 million vacancies in the UK. That's about 100,000 up over the previous quarter and 500,000 more than before the pandemic. So it's quite a significant issue now facing many firms. And this might sound a little bit back to front, but I was actually going to start, Liz, by saying actually the office is alive and kicking. I was around in London quite a bit yesterday and again today. And just for the avoidance of doubt, I think there are huge benefits that we see in the sort of in-person and the office-based activity as well. It's much more easier for sort of culture building, collective problem solving, development and on the job training. So there are many, many things that speak for the in-person and the office. But also your point about how hybrid working can help with then pitching into this shortages debate, because I think it is something that firms can and should be thinking about to play into this. It opens up, obviously, a much bigger sort of geography in terms of available talent and people if they're not having to travel every single day, for example. So it broadens opens your labour market, your talent pool. And similarly, I think it opens up broader demographics as well, particularly, for example, older workers and things like that who might not be wanting to travel every day, but could be more open to work if there is that added flexibility. So I think those are the ways in which it broadens the talent pool. I think there's a couple of stats that jumped out at me. I saw some research from Microsoft recently was saying 70% of people want options around flexibility. And a McKinsey piece of work said that actually 30% would be likely to switch jobs if they were told they had to fully return to on-site working. So it's clearly a big factor for individuals. So if you're looking to appeal to that particular bit of the labour market, it's something you should have your eye on. I think people should really sort of get into their heads the difference between and the relationship between hybrid working on the one hand and flexible working on the other. Hybrid is, of course, just one of a number of forms of flexible working alongside sort of part-time and so on. And then just as firms are sort of starting to get their heads around this as a more permanent setup, as opposed to the flexibility we've had throughout COVID and more remote working and things like that. A few pointers. I think I'd encourage firms very much to be thinking about trialing different approaches rather than going nap and sort of fixing something down from the off kind of thing, because the reality is we're all learning here and we're finding out what works and what doesn't work so well. I think next up, I'd be really clear in terms of what is an informal arrangement and where is it a more flexible working request, for example, and being clear with staff which of those sort of situations it is. And then the third bit is probably to think through what is the balance that kind of works for you as a business between organizational need, team-based need, and then individual need. And you've got at the one end of the spectrum, you could have sort of complete flexibility, not only driven by the individuals, but that might lead to a little bit of sort of disorganized chaos and yeah. Well, you don't want to go too much on the extreme of the organizational need. So that'd be the third bit, is work out the balance between those. And then finally, Liz, I would just say, look, this isn't easy. My own experience is actually full remote is easier in some respects than a hybrid mixed approach. So I'd be saying to firms, think that through and invest in training in all sorts of things like how do you run effective meetings? How do you do sort of good appraisal and monitoring of performance? There's a whole heap of things that we'll get stuck into over the course of this conversation.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much, Matthew. That's a great setup. And there's a lot of in that for us to sort of pick at. I'm tempted to come to Mark Catchlove, first of all, if I may. Hi, Mark. Nice to see you. Thanks for being here. Now, Mark, just very briefly, just tell us a little bit about Millenol. What's your business? What do you do there? What are they?
Well, I'm glad to hear Matthew saying that the offices are busy, because that's our world. We are the largest office furniture manufacturer in the world, although probably 30% of our business in the last 2 years has been home offices as well. So yeah, so we are a manufacturer with 12,000 employees globally.
And Mark, you're the global role, and we were just talking before we went live this morning. Just tell us a little bit, just to begin with, your personal experience. How are you working now? And how does that relate to how have you figured it out for the organization, if you like?
Our role is normally to share our insights. And up until 2 years ago, that was in person, which meant I did a lot of traveling, conferences, client workshops, that kind of thing, where you have high quality interaction that and relatively low numbers, where it's moved to being online. And which is high numbers, you know, we have 200 to 300 people on every one of our webinars. But of course, the interaction and the quality, and let's be honest, the lead generation is much more difficult than being in person. And so it is getting that balance right, and it continues to be a learning process. But we are now moving back into real world physical events in our showrooms, in our dealer showrooms, and in our clients' offices.
Mark, give us a sense of the shape of the organisation. So obviously you have people who work ostensibly in offices. You've got factory people. What does the workforce look like at Millenol?
In the UK, we've got about 300 employees, of which 200 of those are in a factory. So that's okay. So that kind of gives you an idea. And in the US, we've probably got about 7,000, of which 5,000 are in a factory. So most of our employees are manufacturing, and that's where we are seeing our biggest challenge. So whilst I accept that Matthew talks about the shortages, and that will work if we move to new ways of working to get people, what you can't do is you can't make a desk at home. And so those shortages are still, the labour shortages continue to be a challenge globally. And we go to market through our dealers and distributors, and most of our sales are in person, face to face. And that has been a challenge in organisations. People want to touch furniture. People want to sit on chairs. And that whole thing has been a challenge. So we've used technology as much as we can, but that real in-life interaction has been missing, and it's starting to come back. And boy, there's lots of events happening now.
So, Mark, I'm going to come on in a second to sort of really pick away at what is this hybrid thing? What does the word mean? But just that's fascinating when you talk in your particular business, the sales process, the product that you're selling, the requirement for people to touch, feel, sit, you know, that is really real, because there has been a lot of sort of the evangelists for this new sort of remote revolution have said technology can get you all the way there, and this and the sort of carbon emissions are smaller and it's super more efficient. But in your world, actually, you've seen a sort of material impact on this on the sales process, because people need to touch the stuff.
2 years ago, we never had retail facing showrooms. We have 3 retail people in our showroom in London, and that's happening globally because people are buying for their home. They want to come in and try it. They come in. We've sold $50 million of gaming chairs in the last 2 years globally.
Yeah.
That whole world, because people want to feel it. They want to touch it. They want to interact with that. So technology has helped. You know, it helps them choose colors. It helps them, you know, order and everything. But, you know, we sell through John Lewis as well. So people have been able to go into those stores, even when we were closed, to go and try the chairs. So that human interaction is still highly valuable, and getting that balance. And that's not a generational thing. So forget, it's not just because, you know, the older people want to come in and touch it and the younger people with technology. Most of our people coming to the stores are much, much younger than me.
So what are we talking about, Mark? And I'd love to hear what Kate thinks too. This word hybrid, like I say, if I had a pound, but it means a gazillion different things. And I think it probably is one of those used and abused terms. What do you think is important for us to sort of just check ourselves when we're saying it, that we're all talking about the same thing?
Yeah, so I think it's a terminology. And the first role of the leadership team is to define what they mean by hybrid. Because someone will go home and chat to their friend, and what's hybrid from one company is going to be very different for another. It's just a mixture. If you think of a hybrid plant, you know, it's two plants coming together. It's a mixture of working, and there is no one definition of hybrid working. It is a form of agile working. It is a form of flexible working. But clarity is important. I know we had this discussion earlier. But we have to go very careful. It's what I am seeing is that there is less flexibility with hybrid working, if we're not careful, than there ever was before the term hybrid working came on. So words matter. Some companies are being so prescriptive with the term hybrid working. They're telling me what to do rather than giving me choices.
Interesting. Kate, now you're in charge of people at Wilko. There's a lot of love for Wilko in the room today.
Lovely to hear.
Your business, you've got people who work the shop floor. I guess you have people work in warehouses and distribution centres, as well as head office and stuff.
We do, yep.
Mm-hmm. The options available to you as a sort of people leader working with your colleagues and the senior team to design, I'm doing air quotes, hybrid working, it is quite a complex thing. How have you gone about sort of putting this in place, or have you?
It has been really complex. I think at the heart of it is, first of all, remembering that majority of our team members are essential frontline workers, either working in one of our 400 shops or in one of our 2 distribution centres. But clearly, you know, just over 2 years ago, we had to suddenly have around 800 of our head office team members working from home, which we achieved incredibly. So it's trying to keep that equitable balance around remembering that we are there to serve our customers and physically have people in our stores and DCs, whilst having those in the support centre, you know, enabling those team members to be the best that they can be for the customers. So I think at the heart of it, we've had to really listen and test and learn Right the way through. And I think the context has obviously been continually shifting. I think hybrid for us has tried to be this blend of getting it right for Wilko, making sure that we have the same productivity levels, if not better, from our team members, whilst also allowing our team members to, you know, clearly balance home, life, family, and be healthy and happy and keep their well-being front of mind, which has been really, really such a priority during the last couple of years.
Kate, there's a brilliant question, which in many ways I think is the question about autonomy. And Mark touched on it when he sort of was describing there is a sort of danger in many ways. The sort of hybrid revolution has been celebrated as this great revolution to give people more freedom. It's more flexible for people who have caring responsibilities. As Matthew said, it can give you access to a totally different talent pool. All this is kind of tick, 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 good stuff. But it can also have the opposite effect. Businesses, by default, I think human nature is that you want it to be clear, you want it to be consistent, you want it to be fair. And there are some costs sometimes to inclusion and to sort of freedom in that. How much autonomy have you given your teams to sort of design a solution that works for them? Or has it been a bit more top down than that?
I think it has been actually quite, the way we've done it is to be quite team member led. So we've had an agile working group right the way through, sort of a cross-functional group of people that we've talked to. We've run listening pulse checks. We've sought feedback. So we try to keep it pretty fluid. But I think what we're trying to achieve here, certainly in Wilko for our head office team members, is a bit of a flexibility within a framework. So yes, there is flexibility, but we're putting some guidance around it. So at the moment, we're actually holding lots of one-to-ones, line managers and employees to say, you know, typically we would like most of our head office team members to be at a Wilko site typically two days a week on average. So providing a bit of a framework, it doesn't necessarily have to be our head office, which is just north of Nottingham. It can be one of our sites. And actually, from a talent perspective, you know, around 15% of the people that we brought in over the last couple of years are nowhere near in a commutable zone from our head office. So it's been fantastic in terms of tapping into new recruits, as well as clearly motivating the ones that work with us.
That's fascinating. So in the context of this conversation, which is all about shortages and the sort of that's really worked for you. That's a really true thing that you've been able to bring people in that you otherwise would just wouldn't have had a sniff of.
I absolutely would say that, yes. And therefore, that's why I'm really conscious we need to get this right for those team members to keep them engaged. But also, I think it is a growing expectation in certain professions that there will be a level of flexibility. So I think, you know, you need to be progressive as an employer, keep in touch with what the new generations want coming through, rather than, I think, flipping back to the way it was. It's trying to get to what is the new way of making this work successfully, whilst clearly delivering on the business outcomes that you need.
On shortages, in your business, are there particular types of roles that you're finding it harder to fill than others at the moment? And if so, what are they?
Yeah, I would say priority number one would be people to work in our two warehouses at the moment. It's, you know, we... probably around summer 2021, we started clearly to see the number of vacancies go rocket high. Agency team members that we would usually use to help us during our peak, for example, around Christmas time, you know, they've got the pick of many more employers. So that is a top priority for us. We're also seeing real challenges in some of our professional sort of head office skill sets, whether that be commercial talent, marketing, communications professionals, you know, HR, reward professionals, recruitment professionals, probably not surprised to hear that's a real skill gap at the moment. So we're having to work really hard to think, well, what's the team member brand that we have to offer? How can we offer a culture? It's not all about money. Clearly, money is important, but how can we offer a brilliant environment that people can come in and thrive within our organization? So it's definitely keeping us on our toes.
Why would the warehousing roles particularly be difficult to fill? Is it just because of the volume of vacancies, because the demand is such that you need more people than you've ever needed before?
Yes, and also other organisations are needing more, and there are more vacancies in different sectors than there have ever been before. So it's just, I think, a myriad of different factors that have come in. that mean that you've got to really think about the environment that people are working in, and, you know, really keeping on top of why are people leaving, you know, really making sure you understand why they're leaving, and then working on that to help keep them when they join.
We might come back to that. Why are people leaving? Mark, you mentioned your people that manufacture the product. And you can't build a desk at home. You certainly can't build 100 desks at home or 1,000 desks at home. And there's a brilliant question here from Bradley Dinsmore about fairness, because there you are in a global role. You can do your job sort of from home, albeit it's better if you can get out there and do it in person. But if you're a factory worker, you can't do that. And is there a tension between people who have the option and people who just kind of need to go in?
Inevitably, there is. And I think that stems back to what culture did you have before this happened, and how was your equity before this happened? You know, so we share the same canteen when we're at the factory, all those kind of things. That does help. But you cannot change the status quo in some situations. You know, I'm not going to, my role is global. Someone else's role is to stand in a machine all day.
Yeah,
that absolutely. But that's not just factory. That's for everyone across. Listen, I was traveling the world, enjoying life beforehand, whilst people are working in a factory. That's always going to be the case. So there's always what someone might see as inequity, but it's how you manage it. What are the rules? And then for me, it's not just what are the rules. Clarify why. What is the reason that I can go and meet a client, and yet you've got certain rules in the factory? So I absolutely think that's important. Can I come back to your autonomy question earlier? It's such a big and important subject for me. I just want to remind people this. Autonomy is freedom within boundaries. Anarchy is freedom with no boundaries. And I think we often confuse the two. And the other thing is, some people don't want autonomy, which is, and I know Matthew very early on in his introduction said, you've got to start with the business and then get to the individual. No, you start with the individual. What's their personality? How do they like to be communicated? And that's blooming tough. But there are some people that don't want freedom of choice. Tell me what to do and I'll do it. So you need to know them. And so some people don't know how to make that decision. Some people just want to be told. So autonomy, you have to understand how people handle it. It's not anarchy. It certainly has boundaries. And, you know, it's a fundamental human need of everyone. But for some people, it's this important. And for other people, it's this important. I also wanted to pick up on the inclusivity, being able to employ people. This current situation gives us the best chance ever to be as inclusive as we ever can, certainly with offices. If we mess it up now, we will never be able to get it right. You know, getting people that are differently abled to be able to work from homes, you know, companies saying, oh, we can never do that. Well, that's a lie, because you've seen that you can work. So now we can suddenly be inclusive. In its broadest term, you know, the thing we're focusing on now is neurodiversity. Such a big subject matter that some people are now can be included in a working program that could not have been included because someone didn't have any kind of hybrid policy. But for me, it does start, know your individuals. And that's, you know, we've got 12,000 people, you know. Our CEO doesn't know them, but each manager needs to know. I'm going to, you know, there's four of us on the call, but I bet we all read the same email differently. That is absolutely important. So I think language matters. It really does in this situation. And I'm sorry I took it off course, but for me, that autonomy thing is such a big issue.
Yeah, no, it's super helpful. There's another question come in, which I think I'd love you to answer, Mark, and then I'll come to Kate too with a slightly different frame. You mentioned that you've been doing 100 webinars and tens of thousands of people have watched them over the course of, because you had to sort of be fleet of foot and think, well, we can't just say nothing and we need to still speak to our customers and things. What have you learned along the way? Because the first webinar you did, I bet, was nowhere near as good as the 50th one that you did. What are sort of some of the learnings, I guess, and bit of best practice and things for people who are trying to think, okay, so I've got a sales job to do, I've got a customer base, I can't get to physically see them. how am I going to deliver that in the best possible way?
I think the first thing is always ask them what they want to find out about. I think rather than us telling them what we think they need to know, asking them is really important. I think that the one thing I have learned over the last 2 years is more and more people aren't looking for consultancy. They're looking to be told what to do. Some people are so nervous of making decisions. You know, we don't do consultancy, but I can tell you every awareness, what should we do? What do we do? And there is no one answer. I can't, you know, there are 200 companies on a call. I can't give each of those answers. That's one thing we're learning. People are learning more and more, but feel less able to make the decision because the decisions they make, look at, you know, the biggest cost of a company is their people. Their second biggest cost is real estate. And so suddenly both the decisions regarding that affect that. And so lots of companies are nervous, not everyone, and it tends to be the SMEs that are more nervous of making those decisions about, do I keep this office? You know, is there's a lease renewal? Do I stick with that? All of those things, people just say, what do I do? That's one thing we're learning, whereas we used to give advice, they're asking, and so we have to refer them to consultants because that's not our world. That's definitely what's happening. And the other thing is, I think Matthew said it very well, the trial thing. Your office will never be perfect, whatever the situation, and you must remember that. So you have to build in flexibility of people and but flexibility of place as well. And if possible, flexibility of your leases as well when you come up to do that really important thing. Because who knows what that means.
Fascinating. Thanks ever so much, Mark. I feel like a whole nother webinar could follow on the sort of shift from consultative selling to telling selling and the same. But Kate, I wanted to pick up on that methods of delivering remote communications, perhaps more with a sort of internal motivation and training mindset. You must have tried a ton of stuff in the last couple of years at Wilco to sort of keep teams together and how do we do our management training and all of that stuff, because it doesn't just stop. And I know even from our little world at Tortoise, the things that we found really worked in the beginning of lockdown at making people feel like, oh, it's still fun and we're still a team, you know, that those things now would make our toes curl and we just don't have the appetite for a, you know, everybody get together for a beer and a quiz on a Friday afternoon. We're just a bit like, no, I'm really massively over this kind of thing. Give us some tips about what you have found works if you're going to deliver a sort of remote engagement thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we found this quite hard, actually, because we were probably quite a presenteeism culture in our head office. You know, it's a 92-year-old retailer. People have been used to coming for years into the same place. So I think obviously adapting quickly, I think definitely the onus on the leader to communicate regularly and succinctly. So huddles are definitely the thing we do, virtual huddles, very regularly. We used to have a physical balcony briefing when, you know, leaders would stand halfway up the staircase and talk to 1,000 people about business results, etc. We moved that very quickly to online, so have kept that going. I think certainly there is a consistency piece. I think probably around Mark's point around clarity and this anxiety that's come from our team members, you know, knowing that there's a nice cadence and regularity in communication, knowing when they're going to hear how the business is going, what our approach is on hybrid, etc. And then I think from a leadership perspective, we've kept, in fact, if anything, we've ramped up our leadership development over the last couple of years. It has gone 100% virtual, but we've focused a lot on, you know, the shadow you cast as a leader, you know, how you can be at your best for your teams. The onus on you to build that trust, that psychological contract with your team, and to continually trying to sort of open the self-awareness piece, making sure leaders are continually developing and trying to be even better for their team. So, yeah, we've certainly learned a lot on the way. And now moving to the hybrid, you know, it's going to be giving people a reason to come to the head office. There's no point going to the head office and doing what you've done at home for the last 2 years. You want to come and collaborate, physically be with people, meet people that you've not maybe seen for 2 years, maybe do some learning together, some action planning together, creative sessions, etc. So that's certainly where we are now, is trying to give people a reason to physically leave their homes if they're in a support centre role and actually be with people for a reason.
That might be, Kate, part of the answer to this question, which is something that I've worried about from the very beginning of this, from the very beginning of when we started to go back, if that makes sense, which is, I don't know, halfway through or something. Martin Forbes, Heatley has asked, how do you prevent isolation for the people who are not choosing to come in? Maybe their preferences at home and perhaps this disproportionately affects certain types of demographics because you pick the kids up from school or whatever it is you do, that end up being sort of excluded as other people enjoy, like you say, and I very much do. I love the social aspect of the newsroom. I've really missed the stimulating environment of just the chit chat and the gags. And, you know, I really thrive in that. But I know some people would much rather stay at home and their life is designed such that it just sort of is better for them to be at home. But those people, they're not in the eye line of the boss. And I can't help but thinking that that's a disadvantage for them.
Yeah, so I think this is really difficult. And I think in terms of the way we are in Wilko and our values, we try and create more of a pull on this rather than a push at the moment. So as I said, you know, relying on the line manager to have that direct communication with the person, to talk, to give a reason to come in. It may well be that it will work forever or more for that person to physically be based at home. But I would probably have a question in terms of cross-collaboration, building relationships, working cross-functionally. I think there will be a need for that human interaction. So at the moment, I would say we're putting on the onus around providing a reason to come in and stimulus, whether that be learning or work content, rather than pushing and forcing. I think that wouldn't be in line with our values.
Interesting. Matthew, did you want to come in?
Yeah, just on that. I mean, look, completely sort of in line with what Kate was saying in a sense, but I think part of the success is actually being clear on the types of activities that probably lend themselves better to being done in person, as opposed to sort of picking an arbitrary number of days. There might be something in that for people to have a think about that creates that sort of pull reason to come in, I think. Then secondly, I would say your thought about, you know, if people are sort of prefer to be remote and things like that. I think there's a little bit about onus on the individuals as well as the firm enabling it. Look, if you want to kind of insert yourself into the process and insert yourself into the conversation. So if you're choosing to put a balance a bit more remotely, you've got to work out how you do keep your sort of contributing and keep up in all of those kind of things. And then thirdly, your point about in the line of sight of the boss and all of that kind of thing, I do think that comes back a little bit to one of the things I said right at the start about training, for example. We're probably going to have to all learn and adapt how we think about appraisal and performance monitoring. And look, it was always thus, but just a reminder to be making sure you're clear on measuring outcomes rather than inputs and things like that kind of thing might be a bit of a way through that.
I agree, Matthew. It made me smile to hear Kate say we were probably a bit of a presenteeism culture beforehand. Mark is absolutely right that the culture you had before all of this will come back, whether to bite you or to help you or somewhere in between of those things. But people aren't very honest about that often, Kate, about saying we perhaps were a bit like this before. And so maybe our sort of muscle memory could err towards that end of the spectrum, you know. And it's great to hear you sort of admit that. I think we were the same. You know, we're a newsroom and it was a sort of, you know, last man standing, filing the copy, you know, all of that. It was very real for us. How much of the sort of rewiring culturally comes from you in the HR team versus the CEO, the marketing lead, the salesperson? You know, how are you figuring that out?
Yeah, that's really important, because otherwise what you'll end up doing, if it's all around one leader just sets the tone, you'll end up having microcultures and not one way and one aligned way for the company. So I think the way we're doing it, honestly, would be it's test and learn. We talk about it a lot. At the moment, we're running one-to-ones with all of our 800 team members in support centre to almost categorise what sort of worker they'll be, whether they'll be 100% from a Wilko site, hybrid, which is 2 to 3 days, or home working. And we're actually going to look at that data when it comes back. And it'll be really interesting to see how it shifted from before. But I honestly would say, I think you've got to keep listening. I think this is going to be absolutely key. So our team member polls have been fantastic. We run those probably every 8 to 10 weeks, get perspectives on what people are thinking and what they're seeing, and then trying to respond to that.
Mark, what about you in your business? How are you sort of monitoring that two-tier nurse and all the stuff we've been talking about.
We threw into the mix. We were the second biggest in the world, and we just acquired the third biggest in the world. So suddenly, forget what happened before. There is not only is the culture a challenge, it is those two cultural challenges as well. Yeah. But I also think the culture is very different when you ask leaders than when you ask those that aren't leaders. We did some work with Slack in their Future Forum, and 66% of executives said, they're being very transparent. Only 42% of employees agreed with them. Who defines the culture and who you ask might be very, very different. And if any companies have never done this, go and look at Glassdoor on reviews of your company, which can be really kind of scary to do. Be prepared, because it's a bit like, flogging yourself on the back. But that's often the culture is what the people say rather than what the leaders say. I think that is a big challenge. And I just wanted to come back also, I know we're running out of time, but ask yourself, what is the purpose of the office? What is that reason for the office? And what it might be for you might be very different for others. Don't forget, some people might go in the office to work alone. People are forgetting that because they don't have a home working situation that suits that. They might want to go on and still be quiet and not socialize as much, but it's a better environment. So you need to support that. And something that's really interesting, bonding and bridging between. So teams into teams have become stronger. Team to teams come weaker. What Mark Granovetta in his research talks about, weak ties, the kind of things that we all need, those kind of casual collisions, conversations. So we think the office isn't just for collaboration and deep collaboration, and it will be, but it's just for that loose community socialization as well. And remember, you can socialize by being on the edge. Introverts socialize by watching from the outside, still want to feel a part of it. They might want to come in and not be at the heart of it. But it is going back to starting with people. What's the purpose of the office and why are people going to come in? And it's not going to be a bag of sweets on a desk that people can, I've seen all these kind of little fun little things.
Mark, just to add to that, because I think you've touched on a really important point, which is the community of people that really needed the office during the last 2 years from a mental wellbeing perspective or maybe difficult home life. It's been an absolute sanctuary for people in that sense. And we've kept it open for that, very much for that reason. And I think you're absolutely right. I think one size doesn't fit all, and you've got to really listen to the diversity of reasons why people want to physically leave their homes and be somewhere different.
Absolutely. And my sense is that this won't be the last conversation we have about this issue. It's very live. I don't think it's done. I think that we will come back in 3 months, 6 months, another year, and we will still have lots to grapple with. So if you are listening or watching and you feel a bit at sea and like you don't quite know what you do, you're in good company, because I think that's where everybody is at. There's a lot to consider, and it will be a bumpy road, I think, as this settles in. Any parting shots from you, Matthew, on shortages and this series we've been working on?
Yeah, well, thanks, Liz. I mean, look, I think firstly today, just a reminder that obviously we focus on hybrid working, but that is just one of a number of plays that you can make as a firm to help lean into the shortages challenge. So we've got a little bit of a checklist guide available on the CBI website that pushes people at sort of other solutions as well as this, thinking about the role of technology, upskilling and retraining, et cetera, et cetera. So that is one thought. Second, then, Liz, I was just reminded, as Kate was mentioning, the challenges about warehouse workers, how all these things on shortages are interconnected, and we know one of the other challenges has been supply chains and things like that, delays in sort of getting materials and products and things like that. So again, we've got a bit of a dashboard that helps people build up a picture of some of those supply chain challenges outside of your sector. And then look, right back where we started, we said, frustrating though it is, we're talking about shortages because we're trying to knock down these barriers to growth. So if people have got thoughts in terms of what really helps them accelerate into growth as we look ahead, hopefully to more positive challenges, please do keep in touch with us on that front too.
Brilliant. Thanks ever so much. Heartfelt thanks to Mark and to Kate for being here with us. It's been an absolutely brilliant conversation. I have a lot of conversations about hybrid working. This has been a really good one. Thank you for watching or listening, and have a great rest of the day wherever you are. All the best. Bye-bye.